Good morning. This is the inaugural broadcast of Resistance Radio here on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, based in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, but going all over America and all over the world. We have people from all over America listening right now, people all over the world listening right now. And two of my friends are going to be on here in a little bit. My name is Stuart Acuff. I'm a union political and community organizer, now retired. I did it for about 40 years. Used to be the national organizing director of the National AFL-CIO and a lot of other things as well. But really, I'm a believer in and a fighter for social, economic, and racial justice. And we need that now more than ever. I'm here with my very good friend, John Case, who will be chiming in, but who's also engineering the show. Since, you know, those of you who know me know I couldn't fix a screen door on a submarine, so there's no way I can operate two computers. I can barely operate my iPhone. There's no way I could operate two computers and a soundboard. To engineer a radio show. But John is gracious enough and kind enough and brotherly enough to engineer this show for me. Thanks for tuning in, wherever you are. I know Margie's listening from Philadelphia, a good friend of mine from Philly. And later on in the program, actually in just a few minutes, James Haslam, a great local organizer in Vermont, is calling in. He used to be the head of Jobs with Justice in Vermont. Great community organizer who I've worked with for now better than 10 years, I guess going on 15 years. And he's calling in to talk about resistance and about Senator Sanders, since he's neighbors with Senator Sanders, Bernie Sanders that would be. And then at 11:30, my good friend for, I don't even know how long, at least 20 years, Rand Wilson, a union organizer who lives in Massachusetts, and who was one of the founders with me and others of Labor for Bernie, is calling in at 11:30. Every time we broadcast on this show, every time we go on the air, two things are going to happen. One is we're going to talk about the resistance to Trump. That is the number one item on the progressive agenda right now, resisting Trump at every turn. And the other thing that's going to happen is you're going to hear my West Tennessee drawl and twang. There's no way. I don't want to get rid of it. I can't get rid of it, even if I wanted to get rid of it. So I don't know what it is about people from Tennessee and Texas and Arkansas. We not only have Southern accents, we also seem to talk through the front of our face. It's not a great radio voice, but at least you know what? I ain't faking it. And this is, I like to say that this little radio station, Epic Radio, is the rock of Appalachia. We're very happy to be based here in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Those of you who know me know I just retired after, like I say, a long career as an organizer, and this is one of my passions now. I've written a couple of books and published about four dozen poems. I'm hoping to come out with a book of poetry not too long. Like I say, we're talking about resistance to Trump, and I want to talk about a couple of different things that are happening right now. One is that there is a leaker in the White House who keeps tweeting out reports of Trump losing it over various what he considers assaults to his dignity or assaults to his pride, assaults to his sense of self, his narcissistic self. And the contortions he went through last weekend to try to prove that his was the biggest inaugural crowd in the history of the United States, disputing with with the visual evidence. We had the pictures of Obama's two inaugural events. His first one was 1.8 million people. His second one was 1 million people. Trump couldn't even fill up the mall just in front of the Capitol. So we know his was not as big as either of President Obama's. It is so dangerous for us to have a president who is focused on dismantling democracy and for whom the only thing that matters is his sense of himself and what props up his sense of himself and what props up his inflated opinion of himself. The other thing that we've seen is how now Reince Priebus is said to have almost resigned because he was not willing to go in front of the press and lie about the size of the crowds. I mean, if you're going to lie about something, which is never good from the President of the United States or his administration or her administration, but at least lie about something of substance, not the size of a crowd. And so they seem to have a really hard time getting going as a presidential administration. On the other hand, and this is what worries me a lot, he's moving fast to seize power and to put himself into control of as many arms of the government as possible. One result of that is we now have a threat from all of the top career people at the State Department that they're going to resign en masse because they cannot carry out his vision of foreign policy, which is draconian and very scary. We know that he's in collusion with Putin in Russia. We know that Putin gave the order to leak the emails, transcripts, which helped him get elected. I certainly believe, that Putin was colluding with Paul Manafort, who was Trump's second campaign manager, who had done business for Putin, both in Russia as a political consultant and in Crimea as a political consultant supporting Putin's candidates in the Ukraine and in Russia. Of course, you remember that Trump had, I think, four campaign managers, Lewandowski and then Manafort and then Bannon and Kellyanne, Kellyanne did the most to shape Trump up and put him in a position to win the Electoral College. We also see, and I want to put a shout out right now to John, you're going to have to help me with her name, the junior senator from New York. New York State.
Upstate New York.
Yeah. She was the only one to vote, only Democrat to vote against all of Trump's nominees for administrative posts and for his cabinet. If there was anything that cut the rug out from under Trump in the first week, it was John Lewis announcing that Trump was an illegitimate president. And Trump having the temerity. Now, this is a guy who never worked a damn day in his life. Not worked like you and I know work. Never worked a day in his life. And he responded to John Lewis with a tweet that said, "John Lewis, all talk, no action." No. No, Trump. No creep. John Lewis has been a man of action his entire life.
Kirsten Gillibrand,
thank you so much, John. Gillibrand, a senator from New York. If you live in New York, call her up And let me just tell you, I'm going to give you the number that you can call any senator, any House member, any member of Congress in the United States. It's 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. That is the Capitol switchboard. You call it that number and ask for your member of Congress or your senator. You'll go directly to their office and you can deliver whatever the message is. If you live in New York, personally, I would appreciate it if you call Kirsten Gillibrand and tell her or her staff how much we appreciate them and how much we appreciate her for standing up and voting against all of Trump's nominees. In just a moment, my friend James Haslam is going to be calling in. Before James calls in, I want to read a short little quick poem. I'll be featuring some of my poems on this show. It's not a poetry show, but one or two most shows I'll read something. And this is a poem I wrote 2 weeks ago. Yesterday was my son's 17th birthday, and Sunday is my daughter's 15th birthday. In the house where I no longer live, Sid paints her signs for the march against Trump and for freedom, no KKK in the USA. Sam Reed's now a man, still skinny, looks like me at 16, legs splay across the chair and room. I see the years that rock by night after day, love so big I can't hold it in me. So it sometimes hurts the way it blows up in my chest. And I see them skinny and almost grown, can't stay kids much longer. Life not slowing for me. And I'm sure many of y'all can, I'm sure that resonates with many of y'all, even if you don't like it as a work of literary art. But the sense it refers to, the passing of time and watching your children grow up. And how sometimes we yearn, I know I do all the time, yearn for those days when he was 5 and she was 3, or he was 7 and she was 5, when they were little. And now, but I'm so proud of them and I love them so much and I'm so glad I'm their daddy. And I'm so glad I'm close to them here in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, God's country. Wild and wonderful West Virginia, beautiful here at the confluence of the Potomac and the Shenandoah Rivers in the Appalachian Mountains on Epic Radio. Epic Radio, the rock of Appalachia. Folks, we're in a really tough time. Now, this is probably the first time you'll be able to say that listening to the radio, even, or listening to your computer, is a radical act. It's an act of resistance against an immoral government, an immoral president, and an illegitimate president. Now, folks, you're not going to hear me softballing Trump. I think he is as dangerous as hell. I think what he wants to do is dismantle our democracy and take as much power as he can, and it is up to us, as it has always been up to Americans, to stop those who would get in the way of freedom and justice in this country. You know, you'll hear me say this a lot, but the truth of the matter is that the primary fundamental history of America, from when it was born until today, is the history of average people joining together in organization to, as President Obama used to say, form a better union, form a better union. And that goes all the way from the Revolution, where we created a democracy for white men and then fought for 100 years to free black slaves and to end chattel slavery in this country, and expand the Union and democracy, to the fight of the abolitionists to end slavery, that lasted for 200 or 300 years anyway, to the fight that we had to free women to have the vote and suffrage, to the fight to build the American labor movement. Let me just pause right here and say that the truth is that the American labor movement had to undergo more death, more blood, more violence than any other labor movement in any other Western country or first world country or developed democracy. And all the way up to the fight for LGBT people, for freedom, for the fight for women to get equal pay, and the fight for women's rights. And now the fight that is on all of us to fight against Donald Trump and to continue the fight for freedom and democracy and against despotism and against fascism. I truly believe that Donald Trump is a fascist, and that he will act as close to a fascist as we will allow him to be. And on this show, we'll be going back a lot to what forebears, foremothers, and forefathers have seen about this struggle that has existed as long as our species has existed, for greater freedom and greater justice for more and more Americans. Right now, our fight is to resist Trump every way possible. I'm so proud that here in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, yesterday, the Democratic Caucus of the Congress had a retreat here at a place called the Bavarian Inn. And people like you and me, a couple of hundred people like you and me, lined up in a sort of a picket line and sort of a pro-Democratic rally to support their Democratic members of Congress. This was the entire, I think that's James. Hey, James.
Hey, Stuart.
Hey, James. This is Friends and Neighbors. This is James Haslam calling in from Burlington, Vermont. Right, James?
That's right. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. And James is a good friend of mine, a close friend of mine, an organizer I have a ton of respect for. I've known James since probably about 2000. Isn't that right?
I think so. It's been a long time.
Yeah. James used to be head of Jobs with Justice in Vermont, and partly because I had so much respect for his work and he had so many things going on, and partly because that's where Bernie Sanders is from. I went to Vermont a lot and became good friends with James, and so we're really glad to have him on. He is now the founder and the director of, and say it for me one time, James, the name of the organization.
It's called Rights and Democracy.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on the inaugural broadcast of Resistance Radio. James, I'm going to ask you about what you all are doing in Vermont, and also about Bernie and his leadership of the resistance, in part because what matters as much as anything is what we do locally. We've got to let our bucket down in the water where we are and make the fight wherever we are. If you leave it up to John done gone home. John ain't going to fix it. We've got to lift water up wherever we are and make the fight wherever we are. Tell me what's happening in Vermont, James.
Well, we got a lot of stuff going on. It's kind of completely crazy in terms of, you know, as an organizer who's been working on this stuff for a long time, there's never been a moment like this where there's just so many people that are like, what is happening to our country? What can I do to be part of it? You know, the Women's March that we had here in Montpelier last Saturday was the biggest rally probably that's ever happened in the history of our state.
Wow.
You know, Montpelier has a population of 7,800 people. And then the turnout was 20,000. So, you know,
amazing.
Ten million people come to.
Say that again.
So the population is less than 8,000 in Montpelier, Vermont, and we had 20,000 people jam into the city. It was incredible. You know, they had to close three exits in the highway. There's just no place to put more people.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And how long did the rally go, and who were some of the speakers?
It was supposed to be a march and then a rally, but then,
right.
You know, the march was so, so many people came up, it, you know, basically filled the whole march route. And then, you know, we had a rally with some, you know, musical performances and spoken word pieces by a powerful piece by a group here in Burlington, Vermont, for young leaders of a group called Muslim Girls Making Change.
Great.
That was really powerful. We had the founder of Black Lives Matter Vermont here, Ebony Nyoni.
Great.
You know, a lot of great organizers, folks from Planned Parenthood, you know, obviously people from Rights and Democracy, beautiful singing from a local musician up here, Nicole Nelson. She had been on The Voice, really kind of helping inspire folks, a lot of first-time people who had never been at a rally before, and no one had been to a rally that big before in our state because it had never happened before.
That's great, James. And I know that you were part of organizing it. Tell me, how long did you all take to organize it? And what did you do to get that many people out?
Well, there was a group of people that some of our members and supporters contacted us pretty early on, in December, saying, you know, we need a sister march here. And that was before, you know, a lot of the sister marches had necessarily been planned, but they, you know, all around the country, there's the same effort of, you know, it was clearly speaking to where people are at in this country that, people didn't know what to do. They know they rejected, the current administration and wanted to find some way to take action. And so, we did the stuff that you always do. You know, we had, the event on social media started, promoting it. And then we started having big planning meetings with all these people that had never been involved before. Some of them, 50 people came out in a snowstorm to in December to start planning it. And they, ended up forming a whole bunch of different teams to take action. People to focus on the media and the promotion. People to focus on the logistics. People to focus on the outreach, and inviting other groups to join. And it just, kind of snowballed from there.
That's great. That's really great. Does it feel to you like, James, that we're in a moment of movement? We're in a movement moment, that this is going from organization to movement?
Absolutely. I mean, there's, I've been doing this stuff long enough to see, there's times when you're just on a completely different landscape when you're trying to organize for social change.
Yep.
You know, we've worked very hard in our state to get, 1,000 people or so to come out to a rally or an event. And, it can take months, a state like ours. And so getting 20,000 people, it's crazy. The reason we knew it was going to be enormous because the Sunday before, on January 15th, we organized an event at Burlington High School up in Burlington, Vermont. There was part of this National Day of Action our Senator Bernie Sanders had called for.
Right, right.
So Bernie was not even in town. He was in Michigan. But, we organized it, had some of our partners there, and, we ended up on 6 days' notice after having to change the location three times, you know, we ended up with well over 1,000 people.
Wow.
Stuffing into this high school auditorium.
Wow.
And, you know, at that point, you know, we had, you know, maybe like 700 RSVPs. And so, as an organizer, you're like, you don't expect everyone who RSVP'd to come. You're going to have some people that fall off. But lately, over the last several months, we've been getting more people turning out than RSVPing.
That's that sense of spontaneity that occurs in movement, in social movements, that sometimes people act without being asked to act. They act on their own. They act spontaneously. Let me just real quickly say, James, you'll always be welcome on this program. I'm so glad you came on short notice. A good friend of mine who was scheduled to come on today had to cancel last night, so I was kind of scrambling this morning and reaching out to friends and people I respect, and I'm so glad you came on. Let me give you a chance to pitch your organization and what people can do to help your wonderful organizing in Vermont.
Yeah, thank you so much, Stuart. You know, Rights and Democracy.
That's rights and democracy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rights and democracy, like human rights, civil rights. I had been the director of the Vermont Worker Center Jobs and Justice Institute for about 15 years. You know, trying to help build the labor movement here, and we had expanded to, you know, working on a bunch of issues on working families. But it was, you know, a 501c3 nonprofit organization doing righteous work. But, you know, myself and many other people really felt that we were trying to push for a lot of things like universal health care, a lot of these different struggles we were working on with one arm tied behind our back, or maybe even two arms sometimes. And so we launched Rights and Democracy to be a multi-issue organization, because the challenges our communities face, whether it be housing or, you know, wages and economic justice and health care and, you know, racial justice and, you know, the destruction of the environment and climate change and clean water, you know, all of this is interconnected. And a lot of the foes that we're up against are problems across the board. And, you know, we can just see from the national administration, the whole breadth of things that they're attacking right now, you know, shows us that what we're ultimately up against is it's a situation of power, and that, you know, and we needed to not only be able to rally and take action, you know, together, we need to build power together. We need to be able to, you know, have political power for the people. And, you know, it was funny because we were starting to plan this organization.
Excuse me, James.
Right around.
Excuse me, James. Yeah. We've got another call coming in. I think this is Rand Wilson.
Oh, excellent. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Rand, if you could just stay with us. Yours and mine's friend James Haslam is on the other line, and he's got to run in a minute, and then we'll bring you on. Is that okay?
Terrific. I'm on hold.
Don't hold. Just stay on. Listen to your friend.
I'll sit tight. I got you on speaker.
Great. Thank you so much. Go ahead, James.
Yeah. Well, what's great, Rand, is, you know, I was just talking about, so when we were building Rights and Democracy in winter and spring of 2015, when the first conversations were happening, you know, that was right at the same time when our senator, Bernie Sanders, was starting to have, you know, get prepared to launch his campaign for presidency. And we didn't do our public launch as an organization until Labor Day of 2015. And by that point, you know, his presidential campaign had been gaining speed and gaining traction. And he had made this call for a political revolution. And he said at the time that, you know, that we didn't need just a candidate for presidency. And in fact, that wouldn't be enough, that we needed a political revolution that happened on the grassroots level. And that was exactly what we were trying to build. We didn't call it a political revolution at that point, but when he articulated it, he was articulating what, you know, hundreds of people that were building this organization was about. So you know, now we're a year and a half into it. We have, you know, thousands of members across both states. We had a big impact in Vermont and New Hampshire on the election. We helped to elect one of the most progressive lieutenant governors and attorney generals in the country, in our state of Vermont, in New Hampshire. We busted our butts to, you know, help defeat Kelly Ayotte and actually help defeat Trump in the state in a very tight election, in a very tight race, and also elected political revolutionaries down ticket. And then, you know, we're just keeping going. We're fighting for minimum wage, fighting for issues across the board. If people are interested, they can check out our website. We have a website for each Vermont and New Hampshire, and it's radvt.org. Since we're right and democracy, VT Vermont, RadVT, or RadNH for New Hampshire. We're affiliating with Our Revolution in both states, and I'm sure Randall will be touching on that, and just trying to, you know, continue the political revolution that started, you know, in 2015 around Bernie's campaign and you know what we've been about. And we're very excited to be part of a national movement. And you know, while it's dark times and we hear bad news, you know, every day, we knew it was coming. But it's also on the other side of the coin, you know, we're having historic mobilizations, you know, things that, you know, we couldn't have imagined of people coming together across issues, across movements. So, you know, it's crazy times, but, you know, we think that there's the possibility for when we get out of this mess that we're in a much better place than when we started. Thanks very much for having me on the show, and look forward to talking to you both sometime soon.
Thank you so much, James. You'll be always welcome on this show. Come on whenever you want to. Just let me know ahead of time so I can schedule you. But we really appreciate it, and I really appreciate your brotherhood and your friendship. Keep giving them hell in northern New England. And with that, it's a great way to transition to Rand Wilson, an organizer for his entire adult life, a union organizer primarily, very active in National Jobs with Justice, worked for CWA, worked for IUE, now I think still works for SEIU. A good friend of mine for a long, long time, longer than either one of us wants to admit. But Rand and I were two of many founders of Labor for Bernie. And with that, Rand, welcome to Resistance Radio on Epic Radio, headquartered in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And I'd like for you and me, and mostly you, to talk about the leadership of Bernie Sanders in the resistance and in the political revolution going on across America.
Oh, it's great to be here with you, Stuart, and congratulations on Resistance Radio. This is the first I've heard of it, and what a great way to be introduced. I was just listening to the tail end of your conversation with James Haslam, and I just want to, you know, affirm and echo so much of what he was saying about how this time is kind of contradictory. On the one hand, you know, we have a situation where, at least certainly in the labor movement, it feels like there's a double-barreled shotgun to our head, about ready to be fired. And, it feels very perilous, a very threatening time. So many initiatives that one can anticipate coming from the federal government that are designed really to just undermine everything that we've been struggling for so many years, and to try and weaken our organizations. And then at the same time, we have, an uprising that started with the Sanders campaign in so many ways, or certainly was given tremendous momentum from the Sanders campaign, that people coming together, new people coming out of the woodwork, as it were, to be part of the resistance, and who want to fight back, and who want to bring together power at the grassroots level and every level we can imagine to really build the kind of democratic society that can, make progress for the working class, can address issues of climate change and inequality, and, create the kind of democratic society that you and I have envisioned for decades. So, the one hand, it feels more possible and more people than ever before ready to embrace that. And at the other moment, we have this very, very perilous moment of so many threats. So as so many people have said over the years, now is the time to bring these movements together. It doesn't matter what boat you got here on. We're all in the same boat together. I've heard Nina Turner say that with great emphasis and rhetoric. But, it's really true. This is a time when the movements are coming together, and you can see the power beginning to develop. And hopefully that we'll use this time a bit
struggle,
threat
this
and
time
adversary
of struggle.
And struggle to kind of bring things together and create a movement that's prepared to take power in a few years.
That's great. One thing I'd like for you to talk about is this, I don't think has ever happened in America, that we had a social movement grow out of a political campaign. We almost had it with Reverend Jackson in 84 and 88. But this time it's become real. You want to talk a little bit about that and why that happened and how it happened? I know you were central to it as I was. We were in there together. But I'd like for you to tell our listeners, how that happened and why it happened.
Well, it's an excellent question. I'm not sure I have a glib answer.
The best answer you have is what we got now, so that makes it a great answer.
Yeah, good answer. Okay, well, one has to scratch your head about how Sanders came from obscurity to and in a what would have to be seen as a quixotic bid for the president, and how that campaign just took off. And it's, like you said, so unusual to have something like this at the presidential level spark so much in the grassroots. It's almost kind of the reverse of what you would expect. And it must be, in my mind, a reflection of some changes in our society and in the way people relate to one another and to the news media and how politics has kind of shifted. But for labor, I think it was there was a split in the labor movement.
Yep.
That was, really in my mind a split between the people that felt like we can make politics work for us and we can win, and those that were kind of prepared to have the neoliberal model of austerity and always backing up and always compromising our fundamental values, but we're prepared to live with that a little longer. And, for those of us that were with Bernie, and for the tens of thousands of rank-and-file union members who saw somebody at a high-profile level articulate their values, words to a strong class perspective,
mm-hmm.
And to lend credence to what they felt in their gut and had not heard from any mainstream politician for far too long. And here was somebody that went from, I'm going to run a symbolic candidacy just to try to change the terms of the debate with the coronated one, to actually vying for power. Actually contending power within the Democratic Party and ultimately for political power at the level of the presidency. That just fired people up. including myself. And I'm still fired up because
Rand, you're always fired up, brother.
Well, but I believe that I'm fired up because of what I saw at the level of rank and file union members and the passion that was ignited. And that passion, you know, is something that, you know, it's priceless. It's the kind of thing that can change the world.
Right.
And if we don't tap into that, our movement will die.
Right.
The labor movement, it's sometimes it's like our bureaucracy and our contracts and the kind of union structure seems almost arrayed against that kind of passion with the members. And if we don't align ourselves better with the members that, regardless of whether they supported Hillary or Bernie or
right.
Trump, doesn't matter. It's aligning ourselves with that kind of passion on the part of the rank and file, and working with that and respecting it and being prepared to deal with the consequences of a broad-based rank and file led movement. If we're not prepared to do that, we will die. But if we're prepared to embrace it, there's nothing that we can't do. I have so much confidence in working people in this country, and in particular union members, and the experience that they have in, you know, being stewards, filing grievances, in collective bargaining and negotiating contracts, being active in their community, and in the lifestyle that they've been able to achieve as a working person through collective bargaining.
Maintaining a democratic organization for decades.
That's right. That's of, by, and for the people.
That's right.
And self-organization and independent of any political party and any political machine is what we have in the labor movement. And you can't buy it.
That's right.
It shouldn't be for sale.
You can't buy it. So the subtext of this show, for all our listeners, friends, and neighbors across America and across the world, the subtext of this show is there is no reason and no excuse to be depressed. Now is the time to join in solidarity with all of us who are lovers of democracy to protect and defend democracy in America and move on with this great movement that we have built. We have built it. We have built it. It wasn't handed to us from on high. It wasn't presented to us. We have built it in our struggle these last few years and certainly these last months. And now we just have to exercise it. And we see that happening everywhere.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about just, you know, if my own experience since the election is representative of anything, we've got a lot to celebrate and a lot to be excited about because.
Great. Go ahead, Rand.
We lost it.
Uh-oh. Rand, are you there?
No.
Okay. I suspect. Yeah, I suspect Rand.
He'll call. He'll call back.
Yeah,
I think he probably lost the connection. He'll dial it again.
Yeah. We're having fun here on the inaugural broadcast of Resistance Radio at Independent Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, but broadcasting across America and indeed across the world. We're so happy to have you tuned in and listening to us. We're waiting now for my friend Rand.
Actually, something happened. You know, he was that little noise you heard.
Yeah,
that was some kind of weird noise. He might have been calling from. He might have been in his car.
Oh, okay.
I think
he may have.
So he lost his partial right. connection. So I disconnected him. He'll call back. I think you know.
Yeah. Well, if he doesn't make it back, he gave us a good 10 minutes.
He did. And, that's right. You know.
And we always. Let me give y'all a little radio secret. You know how to get invited on lots of radio shows? Is if you can take 10 minutes to answer every question, the host doesn't have to do much work. And so you can tell that Rand and James are very experienced in this because they gave on-point good answers but thorough answers, not yes and no answers, but thorough answers. I'm just really proud of the discussion we've already had, and I'm really proud of all the discussions we're going to have in the future on Resistance Radio. The theme is going to be what's going on nationally, what's going on locally, what Trump is doing, and what we can do to resist it, and how we need to link up everybody together. Rand was talking about the question facing the labor movement now. And I always saw, before I retired and got to a certain level in the labor movement, I always saw it as my job was to take the side of movement in the tension, and my friend John Case, who's here with me, will understand this, in the tension between movement and institutionalization. That's a good tension. It's not a bad thing. Institutionalization has allowed the American labor movement to survive, actually, since the Revolutionary War, because it was guild members, mechanics in Philadelphia, who worked with Tom Paine, and guild members in Boston who worked with Sam Adams, actually, to lay the groundwork for the revolution, who were the real radicals in the American Revolution, which let's admit it. America has a radical past. America has a radical birth. This country is not about fundamentally conservatism. Fundamentally, this country is about government for the people, by the people, of the people, that works for the people. And that's what we got to get back to. That's what our fight is about. And fundamentally, our fight is also... Rand?
Try again.
Rand?
Hey, what happened? Hey. I got cut off. I don't know.
Hey, buddy. Doesn't matter. Thanks for calling back. Are you on a cell phone?
I'm on a cell phone now. I was using a landline before.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you sound great. Thanks. Go ahead and finish your point.
Well, I was nattering on about my own experience with the Our Revolution Network, that is the afterburn,
right,
if you will, from the Sanders campaign, and how we've been building that at the level of the community that I live in, Somerville, Massachusetts, and
right. And
how this weekend we're bringing together dozens of groups across Massachusetts that want to be part of a statewide group called Our Revolution.
Great.
And so that's what I was talking about on an empty, dead phone. Sorry about that.
Well, that's all right.
You know, what's exciting is just so the outpouring of support and enthusiasm, and how the Sanders campaign has left this legacy organization, our revolution, is in fact creates the opportunity to tap into the tens of thousands, millions of people who gave money, signed petitions, came to rallies, made phone calls, and supported the Sanders campaign. And that's an activist base from which to build our revolution, the political revolution that's so desperately needed in this country. And so the tools for that are online at ourrevolution.com and or is it ourrevolution.org? I forget which. But
try them both. .com or .org. Ourrevolution.com or .org.
And you know, sign up there and get involved. And I'll also tell you, Stuart, that the six unions that supported Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
The postal workers, the transit workers, the communications workers, the longshore workers, the nurses, and the United Electrical workers, those six unions have continued to meet and to work together. And to me, it's a bright, shining light in the labor movement that these unions are prepared to continue to support the kind of political revolution that we're talking about. Long overdue that labor unions you know, be actively involved in this kind of an initiative. That
it's wonderful.
It's reminiscent of what we experienced with the Jackson campaign in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
but you know, kind of stalled out.
Right.
And honestly, I'm of the belief that unless this revolution is strongly anchored in the labor movement and in the working class, it won't succeed. It won't succeed without.
Oh, well said. Well said, brother. Thank you.
You know, I love liberals, and you got to have them.
Yeah.
But honestly, there's no compass there. There's no keel for the
right.
work. And if we're not guided by the kind of organizational capacity of the labor movement and the mettle of the
right.
working class, political initiative will fail. In fact, I would say that the Democratic Party has lost its rudder because it turned to Wall Street instead of to Main Street, and it became with the Clintons and with Obama as well. It became a party of that lost its bearings as it turned away from labor and turned away from the working class. And you reap what you sow.
And
you know,
that's
now you see it. Mistake, you know, terrible consequences that have resulted in this victory.
And as John said on the show that was just before us, John Case, my friend, sometimes co-host today, engineering us, as John Case said before, now I forgot what you said, John.
I've said so much that difficult to go back and recover any one.
But I think you're absolutely right, Rand. You can't serve two masters, and but we've got to get the Democratic Party back on track. I think we all believe that, and we welcome listeners to this program. We welcome liberals to listen to this program. We love you. We're all in the same boat now, whether you supported Hillary or whether you supported Bernie. We're all together now. We're all uniting now.
Or even if you supported Trump.
Yep. Even if you...
A lot of good people voted for Trump. We have to recognize that.
Well, thank you.
They're not our enemy.
Right. Thank you.
And they're gonna have buyer's remorse because this guy is you know, talked a good game, but you can see the direction he's going in.
Man, and, can you believe how fast he's made it so clear? I'm shocked at how fast he's moving.
He's got a shock and awe strategy.
Yep.
Which frankly is brilliant. You know, he's going to get us, he's going to undermine our health and safety rules. He's going to tear up the environmental regulations. He's going to bust unions. He's going to declare war on a couple of countries. He's going to, go after, divide and conquer with a bigoted strategy around immigrants. And he's taken away and attacking, women's health and safety and reproductive rights.
Yep.
So it's a shock and awe strategy that's designed to just make all of us, run in six different directions.
Right.
And but hopefully, as you saw last weekend with the response to the call for these women's marches that took place, we've got to come together.
Yep.
And Bernie, of course, has been saying that all along. You know, we've got to have large numbers of people come together and be in the streets, come together in rallies to show the political will of the people.
And
that's the task now. And the labor movement should take a page from last weekend.
That's right.
Imagine if the labor movement and the unions led a workers' march in 25 or 30 cities around the country,
right,
and perhaps around the world,
right,
to stand up to this bigotry and frankly,
fascism,
very, very, very scary, kind of corporatist, fascist, the strongman type of politics, this anti-democratic phenomenon that we're facing. Very, 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 very threatening. So the labor movement should take a page and have the courage to get out there. Now, it might not be as big as last weekend, but it would be big.
It'd be huge.
And we could build it.
That's right. It'd be huge. It'd be worth taking a month or two to build. Hey, listen, you're always welcome on this program. I want you to say hi to three friends of mine, four friends of mine.
Okay.
Five friends of mine. Say hi to Miles Calvi at CWA and John Walsh at IBW, and my good friend Larry Cohen. I know you talk to Larry about every day. And
every day.
That
guy is the ever ready bunny, man.
Well, I know he's always been that way. Tell Larry I said hi and that I want him on the program early as next Friday, if possible. And also say hi to Phil Fermonti, right-hand guy, really good friend of mine. I want Phil on as soon as he can make 5 or 10 minutes to come on. Rand, I just have so much respect for you. I remember very fondly when we were fighting for the Employee Free Choice Act, and I've spent the longest 10 years of my life one summer in Arkansas when you came down to help us in Arkansas, and we did that all-night vigil at the church in downtown Little Rock, and all we've done together over the years at Jobs with Justice. You're a great leader, a great organizer, a great engine. You've got a great motor that never stops running. You're always ready for the next fight, and you're exactly the kind of person we need stepping up and stepping out in America. And as Rand says, there is a place for all of us. Let down your bucket where you're at. You don't have to go to Washington, D.C. You don't have to go to Shepherdstown, West Virginia. You don't have to go to Chicago. Wherever you are, there is good, righteous, democratic work to be done, and people who are waiting for you to connect them and help them get involved. This is not like any other organizing you've ever done where people are wary and don't know and blah, 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 and don't want to get involved. People want to get involved. That's why Rand Wilson is on this radio program today, because he is the best example of that. Rand, we're going to have to go off the air in a minute. Leave us with one wise thought, please.
Well, the one thing I would say that maybe is I love what you said, which is the activism is right where you are. You know, make the revolution where you live, where you work, and do it right where you stand. And that's where it begins, and don't stray from there. And, you know, I think we should remember that that it's things like this happen from the bottom up. Unions don't organize workers. Workers organize unions.
Right.
Revolutions don't come to you. You make them.
Right.
And you have to be prepared to give a little bit of your time, but what you'll get back in return in terms of the satisfaction of seeing your actions make change is priceless.
You're right. So good, my friends, and I thank you. I'm so grateful that you came on at the last minute. Our friend, our good close friend, Peter Olney, was supposed to be on this morning, but he had to cancel. He's training some organizers in Vegas, which is what Peter does now, as good as anybody, better than almost anybody. Probably not any better than me, Rand. Oh, it's just a joke. But you're always
right. Well,
welcome on this program, buddy.
Kind words.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Resistance Radio on the Rock of Appalachia. Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, Resistance Radio. We're going to be on a week from today, Friday at 11 o'clock.
You're still going to do Friday, not Wednesday?
I'm going to do Friday next week.
Okay.
And then move it.
Think about it. Yeah,
and then I think we'll move it.
Okay.
And I'm here, and I'm so grateful to my good friend, who's probably saved my life a couple of times, John Case, Great organizer.
We save each other.
Yeah, that's right. Close friend, and he's worked as my engineer today because I'm too damn stupid to figure out how to run two computers and a soundboard at the same time. Loving what we're doing. Please tune in. And please, if go to my Facebook page, Stuart Acuff. Take the things I've written about this, please, and share them. We want to build the listenership of this independent radio, internet radio. We've got people across America. We had two people a long way from West Virginia talking today. Every week we'll have guests from across America. We even have people from across the world. You're tuned in to the revolution, our revolution, and to the resistance, our resistance. Be good. God bless you. And John Case has his very own special sound off.
It's late, but everything comes next.
Amen. Bye now. God bless you.